call that air guitar?
Just don't drown out Tom Petty. Like the LSU band tried to.
You know, I thought about starting again on a Tom Petty song. We did that the other day, and it sounded really good. God bless Tom Petty.
I thought about it too late, but Tripp's a big Eagles fan.
Yep.
Next time we have him on, we'll go with the Eagles.
Eagles, CCR.
I might have been able to do something about that. Hey, you're listening to Inside Bassmaster. This is your host, Thomas Allen. With me is the man who keeps his finger on master control at Bassmaster.com, Jim Sexton. And also joining us in studio today, hit end on my phone, is the tournament director, Tripp Weldon. Tripp, Jim, thanks for being here, guys.
Good to be here.
Yeah, excited.
We are excited. We got some cool stuff to talk about, and Tripp is in process of finalizing a lot of things. He's a very busy guy. Obviously, the elite season is over, and as we look into 2018, there's some new rules, one in particular we want to hear about. So I want to ask you about that rule starting off. It is the no information rule. It's new. It's been widely accepted and encouraged by lots of the anglers, but there's been some confusion. It's been an evolving rule. If you could give me kind of the nitty-gritty of what that's all about and how that's going to affect next season.
Sure. Here's the genesis of that rule was at an elite advisory board meeting at Ross Barnett back in the spring of this year. And it started with not getting waypoints or locations and kind of morphed into pros not wanting pros to be able to talk to other pros. So we initially came out with it. We had to tweak it, and then we ran a survey. And then we talked to the advisory board, and we said we kind of went back and forth on it before we came up with the final document that's now incorporated into the 2018 rules, that we have to be realistic. It has to be easy, simple for the anglers, but as well it has to be easy for us to enforce. So basically what we have is, once you learn of a tournament site, whether it's, you know, if it's you're working with the local chamber of commerce to contact Bass, and before the tournament's announced, you know about the tournament, you cannot get any waypoints or locations for that tournament water. We backed off on the part where anglers can talk to each other, because at the end of the day, there's just no way. When you've got three and four guys staying in the same house, out working spooling line, you know, on boats in the afternoon or in the evening, there's just no way realistically to keep them from talking to each other.
Well, interestingly with that, that's fishing, right? Because, you know, the NFL guys, if their buddy is on opposite teams, they're not going to share playbooks. But this is the type of thing where fishing was born out of the camaraderie, and you almost have to keep that a little bit, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are anglers, and I see their point, that don't have traveling buddies, that stay in campers by themselves, that don't want other anglers to be able to talk to each other. But at the end of the day, we didn't think it was realistic in our sport for that to happen. So once the tournament is announced, you cannot get any waypoints or locations. You can pre-fish with another elite pro. You can pre-fish with someone that has no knowledge of the tournament waters. Or we did put a clause in there, you can pre-fish with an immediate family member. Mm. And there is a provision in there to allow anglers to captain high school teams, of which, you know, their child 18 and under may be a member of the team. So once we get into the 28-day off limits, it's pretty much the same. No changes there. And so a lot went into it, and we'll see how it goes year one and probably make a tweak or two. But for the most part, it evolved around getting waypoints, because we all know, you know, Thomas and Jim, you now know that now that you're in the fishing world last, what, 4 or 5 years?
Six
years, there you go. You could get the very best ledge on Kentucky Lake with one waypoint, and that is a competitive advantage. And that is what this whole thing evolved around, and that's what they want to prevent.
Well, you know, as a fan, I've been a fan for, wow, I guess I'm looking at my 20-year reunion, not, you know, in 2 years for high school, so 20-plus years. And one of my favorite parts of the sport is the fact that these guys can find fish better than anyone out there, but it's kind of disheartening as a fan to have found out in the past that, oh, well, they got waypoints from somebody. But the other side remains true, and as fishermen, I'm sure you would agree with this, to a certain extent, even a waypoint on Kentucky Lake is going to help, but you still have to make the fish bite. And it's important to do that work, but the top-level competitive series, I want, as a fan, to know that, you know, those guys really won by being the best anglers.
Right. Well, let me say at this level, and I am biased because I see how good these guys are, trying to make them bite, they'll figure out how to make them bite.
Sure.
They get that waypoint, and the fish are there, they're going to figure it out.
Trip, one of the pieces of it that that seems important is they can't use information or get information that is not publicly available to anyone. So they can still go online, look around, look at maps, variety of things, but they can't be gathering information from sources who aren't available publicly to everyone. Is that right?
That is right. And that rule's been in place, you know, inside the 28 days since the inception of the Elite Series.
Mm-hmm.
But you are right. And now only public information.
And now it's broadened out to...
it's broadened out.
As soon as you know the tournament location, you can't gather information that's not publicly available.
That's correct. So to the general public out there, don't be offended if you walk up to a pro outside of the 28-day off limits and inadvertently start telling him something and he rudely tells you, I can't talk about that. Don't be offended. He's just protecting himself.
It is protecting himself. And talk to me a little bit about... You know, we do a polygraph, right, occasionally? How does that do? You just randomly select somebody out occasionally and ask them a few questions?
We do random polygraphs. We call them truth verification. The pros never know when we're going to do it. We do them different days of different tournaments. We haven't done them at all tournaments, but they never know, and we do them randomly unless there is a need for us to address a specific situation with an angler. And that happens occasionally, so yes, we do that. That is a tool.
All right. Well, looking forward to 2018, are there other rules we need to hear about or notable changes?
Not a whole lot of notable changes. We've added, starting in 2018, you can only use culling clips that do not penetrate the fish's mouth or membranes. We've had an occasion the last couple of tournaments of the fall of this year, and we had it with the Elite Series where anglers failed to take the fin clips off of fish and those things. So we're putting the onus back on the anglers. If they present a fish at our verification table, it has a fin clip on it, they're going to be deducted 4 ounces for every fin clip. That's
so
presented to us.
You say a fin clip, and explain what that is to those that don't know what it is.
Yeah, a fin clip, if you catch fish deep, sometimes they have what, in layman terms, the bends when they come up, and that's where the fizzing process comes. But if you don't want to fizz them, you can put a leaded fin clip, and it's a pretty good size lead, about the size, I don't know, an ounce or two.
Definitely something that could add to the weight.
Absolutely, especially a collection of them. And you clip it to the bottom fin of the fish, and it holds them upright in the live well. And it helps the survival rate, obviously. And so we've had an occasion, and we get it. Anglers are on the water all day. They're dehydrated. They're tired. And they're not thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're going to put the onus on them. So they've got to think about that. We'll address it at our briefings.
Well, we've been to a few tournaments that have come down to ounces, so that's definitely the kind of thing you want to make sure they're paying attention to.
Trip, with the non-penetrating culling clips, does that make it now so that all Bassmaster series have to use the non-penetrating culling clips?
Right. Started with high school and college last year, and now it's across the board this year.
Fantastic.
Mm. Yep. Well, that's going to be a good move for fish mortality. It'll be interesting to see the new products that come out because of that. There's a few already on the market I think are pretty neat, but that's going to evolve. So it opens up a new corner on the fishing market. We'll probably see a lot at ICAST 2018. Can't wait to see what they come up with. So let's shift gears a little bit. This is the time of year. The Elite Series is over. The Opens are over. We have almost all of our classic qualifiers determined. We've got two events, a nation championship and the team championship.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Four spots.
Four spots left to go. We're going to hear about those in coming weeks. But, you know, look, this is the top level of competitive bass fishing, and we need to make room for new Elite Series anglers who have earned an invite. We're not going to talk about names today, but what happens to a percentage of the field trip each year if they have a level of points or below? How does that turn over?
Well, we started several years ago averaging the anglers' final year final point totals. And starting this year, after 5 years, you get to drop your lowest weight. We were dropping the lowest tournament total, but this year when we met with the Elite Advisory Board and we ran a survey, they wanted to start after 5 years. So we've got the top 70 from 2017 are invited back. 15 anglers, 5 from each open division, non-elite qualified, are invited to join the 2018 Elite Series. We had 6 rookies slash newcomers that finished below 70th. They get an automatic second year. So we'll end up inviting 16 anglers from that average list. So the process works like this. We'll take entries for that top 70, those 15 opens, and those 6 rookie slash newcomers. If we have any declines from that group, we work down our final points list. And then we go to the average. After all that's said and done, that dust settles, we go to our average list. And once that's settled, then we invite 2 legends that do not count against our total field of 108 anglers for 2018.
And with the nation champion.
And a nation champion, yes.
One invite there.
One invite there, and if he declines, that goes down the points list as well. Mm-hmm. So the last group, the next to last group is the average list, and once that process is done, then we'll invite 2 legends to join the series in 2018. This past year, man, we had a phenomenal rookie class. You look at Dustin Connell, you know, beat Jamie Hartman by 1 point. MDJ Mark Daniels Jr. had a great year. Jesse Wiggins won 2 opens. He almost won our first Elite Series, and then all the other anglers, and we'll have some fantastic rookies next year.
You know, we talked about this in the last show,
right.
and I would love to hear what your thought, Tripp. I've been following the sport for a long time, not as intimately as I have the last couple of years. Jim has been 6 or 7 years. Is this, in your mind, the toughest rookie class that's ever been on the Elite Series?
It's certainly right there with the best. You know, I'm trying to look back, and you're talking about a lot of classes of rookies because I've been doing this a long time. But, man, it's right there at the top. I talked about it with Dave Mercer on stage. I've known Dustin Connell a long time. Our youngest son, Ben, and Dustin have fished team tournaments together. Dustin was on the Alabama University of Alabama fishing team with Ben, and Ben's told me, and Ben's been in the boat with a lot of anglers. He said, "Daddy, by far, he's the best fisherman I've ever been with in my life, including you, Daddy." So, but no, seriously, and so I knew his credentials. I think Jamie really came out of the blue, probably because he lives in New York.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back and look at his BFLs and Coastal Series, I mean, this guy's a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
But to come down south and do what he did, and he came within a point of taking that title. And then I followed Mark on the FLW Tour, and he's done a great job. He had a great cup here at Ouachita a couple of years ago. Jesse Wiggins I knew about from the Alabama Bass Trail. And then his success in the Opens. And then all the other anglers, Alton Jr., and when you start calling names, you leave somebody out. But what a great class. It was a fun year to watch them.
It was definitely fun, and it's going to be another exciting start to the 2018 season. And before we get into the question I've been actually really looking forward to asking you, talk to me briefly about how you've seen young anglers change over the years that you've been working with Bassmaster. Obviously, there's been electronics, advancements in equipment, boats, motors, the list goes on and on. Do you think that today's young angler could compete with yesterday's young anglers, or are they that much better, or do you think the instinct you get by not having all those modern conveniences makes you a better angler? What do you think?
I've always felt like the very successful anglers have that sixth sense, that knack, but to answer your question, there's no doubt today's angler is much more educated. You hit the nail on the head, technology. I mean, I remember Dustin Connell 7 or 8 years ago. He had a 15-foot boat with probably a flasher on it and a 12-volt trolling motor. And I look at him now, he's as good as anyone reading his electronics. they learned it. You know, I'm biased to the Elite Series, what we've shown on TV and in Bassmaster Magazine and on Bassmaster.com, and the way we've educated anglers, not to disparage. I mean, FLW does a great job in other organizations, but certainly I'm biased to the Elite Series and the best anglers in the world and what they've done to educate the general public. And then hats off to the manufacturers
who
come out with these products. And so, you know, technology is the deal. I mean, their phones, you know, they learn so much just looking at a Google map. They can study that and then you know, look at their units. And I think ability-wise, as far as their mechanics and all go, all of them are pretty equal. Most of them now are flipping and pitching with their left hand. The right-handed guys, they've got all that down. It's that sixth sense of knowing when to make decisions during the day and then the ability to use technology to their advantage.
That's true, the instinct side of things.
Tripp, I got two questions to follow up on before we leave the no information rule. One is, overall, the goal of the rule, I think, if I put it in my words, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it is that the anglers do have to focus on the information they can get themselves, and that we don't want a scenario where anglers can collect tons of information and really get a leg up on the competition by doing a ton of homework ahead of time. Now, they can go and pre-fish just as always. They just can't collect a lot of information. And at the very top level of the sport, we want them to use their own instincts, their own information, and not be able to gather information. Is that accurate way to sum it up?
Right. We, as a tournament official, we want a level playing field. We don't want anybody to gain an unfair competitive advantage. Putting in your work is a fair way to do it. And, you know, we talked about, and I'm going to back up a little bit, we talked about the rookie class. We omitted Jacob Wheeler because he was not considered a rookie. He's a newcomer. I don't think there's anybody out there that outworks Jacob Wheeler.
Right.
I mean, you got to give the guy his due. He works his tail off, and he's one of the very best at using technology. But he goes to these lakes and pre-fishes, and he's on the water daylight to dark in practice. So to answer the short answer to your question is whatever is available to everyone to keep the playing field level, in our case is tournament waters, and the playing field level, and not allow any angler to gain an unfair competitive advantage.
That makes sense. No doubt it creates some work for your team kind of monitoring this rule. What are the challenges of, so we've put the rule out there now, what kind of challenges does it create for the tournament staff to actually keep up with it and monitor it, police it, so to speak?
I don't think it's any different than what we've been doing. The first onus is on the anglers themselves. They're supposed to police themselves and bring anything to tournament officials. You know, we can't go chasing ghosts, as I tell the anglers all the time. Thomas touched on our truth verification. That is a tool. And then we keep our eyes and ears open like we always have. We will continue to do that. And I think it just comes down to that. And hopefully nothing happens. Will it happen? It might down the road. But so far I feel good about what we've done through the history of Bass and certainly the history of the Elite Series. And I don't have any doubts that we won't be able to do that moving forward.
Well, we definitely want to seed good decision-making for the next generations. And, you know, one of the greatest things about the last few years in this organization is the high school and the college level of competition. And obviously, you know, if you're in a high school level, you need some instruction. And it's, you know, all those coaches are helping those anglers become better at making their own decisions. And so while that rule applies at the top level, does that apply to opens anglers? Does it apply to college? Or does it stop at the Elite Series?
This stops it. This is in the Elite Series rules. I'm not going to say Chris Bowe's working on the open rules now, mm-hmm. and Hank and John Stewart are working on college and high school, but this is specific to the Elite Series right mm-hmm. now.
Well, it'll be something that they'll learn about as they're coming through those ranks. And, hey, I'm excited about those levels because that keeps us employed. That means our future is still working.
At the end of the day, you know, everybody should find their own fish. We as fishermen, we always want to catch fish and have fun. And it's easy to go out there and fish someone else's fish, so the saying goes. But you'll feel a whole lot better about yourself if you catch your own fish.
You know, that's a fact. That's turkey hunting, that's deer hunting. If you have a trophy on your wall, if it's a bass trophy, and you know wholeheartedly and purely in your heart you worked for that, then it's going to mean a whole lot more. And I think that's really at the core of why we love the outdoors, because we're conquering on our own a force that seems to be insurmountable.
Right.
So speaking of insurmountable, you can't beat this guy on Lake Martin the way it sounds. And Lake
I'm told.
Yeah. In Alabama is our first stop on the Bassmaster Elite Series, and I really want to hear, Tripp, what you think about that lake, about the tournament we're going to have there in February to kick things off. And are you excited to go to your home lake? You're going to sleep in your own bed.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, man, I can't wait. I think it's going to be somewhat similar to Cherokee. I don't think the weights will be as big, but I am super excited about going to Martin. I used to live right near Kalijah Bridge. I'm 61 years old, been fishing the lake for 40-plus years now, and had success, won 3 BFLs, a Costa, and a bunch of team tournaments. And I'm just giving you my credentials. So
yes.
How many tournaments have you fished on that lake?
Oh, golly,
just
Jim,
a guess.
Hundreds.
Hundreds,
yes.
Wow.
Hundreds.
Have you fished against
– if not more.
Have you fished against Steve Kennedy there?
I have.
Have you beat Steve Kennedy?
I did beat Steve Kennedy.
Good.
In a Bass Invitational. Actually, I came in second to Pete Galusik. Pete beat me, and he had a great week. And I actually caught a 6-pounder right across from Steve Kennedy. I'll never forget it, off of a dock. But what you're going to see, the lake, I was telling you this earlier. Again, I'm 61, and the lake is changing. I hate to see it because it's hard to break old habits. But I was fishing a tournament this past weekend, and for the first time in my life, I saw huge schools of blueback herring.
Really?
Yeah, I knew. I had friends that had told me about it, and it's been written. I mean, it's public information that bluebacks have found their way into Lake Martin by one way, various means, and we won't go into details there. I had not personally witnessed it, but I did this past weekend. So that's going to change the lake. Another thing that's going to change the lake is, and it's going to affect our tournament coming up. Lake Martin is a watershed reservoir. They used to annually draw it down 10 to 12 feet in the winter. Under FERC, a new permit with FERC, Alabama Power now has the option to only draw it down about 6 feet. Normally, around Labor Day, they pull the plug and the lake starts going down. As of this podcast in October, it is still slam full.
Wow.
So I think we're looking at a lake that's going to be down 5 to 6 feet when tournament time rolls around, which is not a bad thing. It'll make it fish bigger, but it's going to change the lake a little bit, probably not as much as the bluebacks, but it's some great spotted bass, some good largemouth. My guess, if someone asked me last weekend, what do you think it'd take to win it, I'm saying in the 55-pound range, give or take a few.
Fantasy people, pay attention here.
Yeah, right. I think you're going to see some 17, 18, maybe a 20-pound sack. I don't think you'll see many sacks over 20. But to follow that up with a big day is sometimes hard on Lake Martin. You may follow it up with a 13-pound day and then a 10-pound day and then a 12 or 14 pound day if you make it to Sunday. So
if you had to take a stab at a big fish on that lake that we'll see in that tournament, what would it be?
That in February, there'll be, I think, a 7+.
Wow.
Could be bigger. Renault Pelletier caught almost a 10 pounder.
Oh, wow.
When we had a pro-am there years ago. I don't know. My best five, I fished team tournament one time by myself. I had five that weighed 23-4.
Wow.
And that was my best five. But that was a day of a lifetime on Lake Martin. All the stars aligned and everything was just right. And that was in February. So
speaking of February,
it'll be pre-spawn. And yep. the fish will be the fattest they're going to be for the year.
Okay. You don't suppose we'll be contending with a day one of the Classic at Hartwell a couple of years back, do you? We won't see 9 degrees when we're there?
I don't think we'll see 9 degrees. We could see snow and ice on the roads, but I've never seen the water temps on Martin get, you know, much into the mid-40s. Usually, even on a cold, cold winter, it's still in the upper 40s. Road conditions would be the wind, snow, and ice like that should never make us cancel a day on Lake Martin. It looks like if you hold all five fingers out, that's what Lake Martin looks like. So we don't have to worry about wind. We'd have to worry about road conditions would be the only other thing, or thunder and lightning. But other than that, I think we'll be good to go. Can't wait.
Trip, if you look at next year's schedule outside of Lake Martin, which one are you looking forward to the most?
South Dakota.
Okay.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I mean, just to go to that part of the country, what I've heard about Owyhee, the big smallies and stuff, I do hear we'll have to worry about the wind.
Yeah, well, that one thing's for sure, it blows in the Dakotas.
Yeah, and there's nothing to buffet it, in my understanding. All the hills look like top of my head. There aren't any trees. It's like tundra, I guess, Thomas. You're from up north, so. Yeah.
I actually spent my first three years of marriage in North Dakota, in Minot.
Yeah.
And they say, why not Minot? And freezing's the reason. But it gets cold up there. The wind blows. But the thing of it is there are a lot of coves, a lot of places to get out of the wind. And it's going to be what I think probably one of the most picturesque tournaments that we'll have ever had. It'll be unique. We'll see some interesting things. There's tremendous walleye and pike in there that they'll accidentally bump into, but it's a bass fishery that I think is largely untouched. The Missouri River creates that impoundment. It's going to be, I can't wait.
Talked to Brent Ayler yesterday, and he told me he caught a big salmon, about a 10-pound salmon.
Yeah, really? Oh, there's yeah. salmon in there,
wow.
too. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, you think about how long that lake is. I mean, it literally goes from Pier basically up to Bismarck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can't go to North Dakota, let me
right.
clarify that, because they have a three-fish limit. And let me say, I love all the places we go. I've been doing this. Will be my 28th year coming up, being with bass. And but I like going to new places. It was, mm-hmm. you know, when we went to Mille Lacs, that was cool going there for the first time. And I've never been to the Dakotas. I've been pretty much all over the United States, but never been to either of the Dakotas, and so I'm looking forward to this one.
Well, I can't wait to get the season kicked off. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about before we get there. We're going to have more discussions about future Elite Series. We're going to get some of these newly invited Elite member Elite Series pros on the show, talk about their dreams, talk about all that stuff, but I wanted to play a song for you, Trip. That's a little bit more your style.
There you go. Hotel California.
You like that?
Yeah, I like any Eagle song.
Now, are you tipping people off to the next schedule, Thomas?
The next schedule?
2019.
Are you?
I can't say.
I'm not privy to that kind of information.
Say. No, I'm not either, actually.
Hey, that's my football coach's favorite band, too. Coach Nick Saban. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. There
you know, he had to work that in one time.
Wasn't that smooth?
That's right. It really is natural.
Yeah, back to real quick on the rules changes. We won't allow tunnel hulls.
Oh, yeah.
Moving into 2018. So I failed to mention that. That's one of the significant changes. So we had outlawed jet drives, jet engines, and just to keep the competitive field level, we won't allow tunnel hulls moving forward.
Hmm. You're good.
So no pontoon boats, guys. I don't even know what that is.
And is that for the opens, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Ready for the opens.
Leveling the playing field. In fact, we're going to talk about the opens down the road here. It's been a complete overhaul, if you will. It's going to be very competitive. It's going to be good for the next gardening, if you will, or the next crop of anglers coming into the Elite Series. I think it'll better prepare them. We're going to get Chris Bowes on the show at some time. We got to make sure he gets in here to do that. He, like us, have a great face for radio, so we would probably do a good job with that. But, hey, this has been fun. It's been an informative trip. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. Jim, as always, it is such a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Great to be here with you guys today.
Looking forward to doing it again.
Thanks, guys. This has been Inside Bassmaster. This is your host, Thomas Allen, and we'll be back in another week with another exciting topic that we're going to keep under wraps for now. We still don't know what it is, actually. That's probably the truth of the situation.
We'll come up with some good ones, no doubt.
Thanks for being with us. We'll catch you here next time.